Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Today is September 14th, 2023. Today's Thursday. And this is season four, which means this is the fourth year we've been doing that. And this is the seventh episode that we're doing. And we hope you all had a great summer because, as you know, just like the Fed skips, we skipped a podcast last month. So it's been 2 months since we had this and been able to talk to you. And hopefully you're out water skiing like Dryden was over the summer. Welcome back. So we have a full agenda because, like I said, we skipped last month. And the main topics of the day is going to be talking about what's going to happen with the Fed next week. We do have a Fed decision next week, next Wednesday. We're going to talk about that, what we expect to happen. And then we'll talk about, based on that, what we expect for the markets and economic events. Then I'm going to talk a little bit about long-term care and some new options that we have through Schwab. And we'll also talk about the sectors and area that we like in the market. And we just have actually very few client questions. People are not asking many questions, right? But the ones we have, we will answer. So with that, I do want to make sure that you know the next podcast, before we forget, is going to be on Thursday, November 2nd. So we won't have one technically in October, but it'll be the first Thursday of November 2nd. So with that, Dryden, we have a big Fed decision. The Fed, just like us, takes off the summer. Of course, we work. We just took off the summer in terms of having a podcast. We work every day. But they don't have a meeting till now, since last meeting they met in July. And as you remember, they raised interest rates in July as an insurance rate hike. And then they are data dependent. And there's been a lot of data points between now and then. We had one yesterday, we had one today, and which really is surprising the market because there weren't necessarily great data points, but the market went up anyway, which I'm going to ask you about later. But now I really want you to tell me what you think the Fed is going to do next Wednesday, and accordingly, what can we expect from the markets?
Sure. So basically, it's general consensus. Everybody pretty much believes that the Fed is going to skip next Wednesday. We've talked before about the cadence of these interest rate hikes, and they, you know, went up 20, you know, they were up 75, then 50, then 25, and, you know, had a couple of months off, and then we skipped one, and then we rose one in July, and then we didn't do anything in August. Everybody took a month off, and we'll probably skip in September, which means what's going to happen is you're really not going to have another major Fed decision moment until November 1. We're still in this moment where after, you know, over 11 interest rate hikes over a very short period of time, we're still trying to figure out how long does it take for these things to really affect consumer spending and inflation. And so what's interesting is you saw inflation coming. Why is the Fed hike interest rates? Because they're trying to tame inflation. And you saw inflation get directionally correct. It's dropped from 9.1 down to 3 when you got to June or in July. And so then what you're beginning to see is now you begin to see CPI creep back up. So it's kind of came down to 3 and it bounced up. Did it hit the Fed's target of 2? No. And I think there's this huge debate that you're going to see going forward over the next 6 to 9 months, where we're trying to sort out, is it a target? I was on Reuters and a couple of the TV shows about this, and we talked about the difference between a target of 2 and a tolerance of 3. The Fed's always going to say we're targeting 2. But I think that they're going to, without saying so, move into a tolerance of 3. Because when you think of core, when you think of all the things happening with inflation, and the point I've said many times is that a 3% inflation rate has been quite successful in the American economy for quite a long time. It's not the end of the world. A 4% Fed funds rate or Fed funds rate above 4%, much the same. Now, what does all this mean? It means we have some resurgence of inflationary pressures. I call it the disinflation moment, right? We're no longer directionally heading the right way. It's beginning to firm up. Two particular reasons. First, services. That's very, very sticky. We've talked about that. And the second is the base effects that we had from a year ago. If you think about a year ago with really high energy prices, and then they came down, and now you're beginning to see energy prices go back up. If you go back to June, West Texas Intermediate crude was at $70 a barrel. Now it's at $90 a barrel. That's because we're now having a production deficit of 2 to 3 million barrels a day globally. So you're seeing prices jump back up. That's caused an increase in gas prices here in the United States. I mean, in California, it's always astronomical. But for everywhere else, it went from 353 to 385. So you see a 30% movement in oil prices, a 10% movement in gas prices. You're seeing inflation sort of reignite. That's going to give the Fed a reason to be a little concerned. And I think that what we end up doing is we've moved the debate on interest rates from how high to how long, and the market is going to have to begin to adjust to the fact that we're probably not going to see a lowering of interest rates, certainly not this year, and certainly not early 2024. So you're seeing the fact, and all of this is driven by the fact that the economy is doing well. The economy is doing well. We have more people working today than ever before. And they're making more money than ever before. We have 4 million more people working than we had at the height pre-pandemic. We still have, and we're gradually seeing some labor force participation rate go up. But just if you think about it, it's got an interesting fun number. If we just had the same labor force participation now as we did pre-pandemic, so we moved from like 63 to 64 points, or whatever that number is. The point of the matter is if you got just the same amount, right, that you had before, we would be adding $121 billion into the economy. So we basically, people just, the same number of people, participation rate, go back to work as they did before. It's like we grew an entire state of New Mexico, right? So the important thing to recognize is this economy still has a lot of resurgible strength in it. There's some inflationary pressures. It's not going to go down as fast as the Fed wants it. Nobody told the American consumer, don't fight the Fed. And quite frankly, the American consumer doesn't really care. So they're continuing to make money. They're continuing to spend money. We see the economy be relatively strong throughout the rest of this year. And the rest of the world is beginning to come to that conclusion too. And that's why when you saw the market today and these inflation numbers came out as like, oh, wait, they're coming back out. Then they had to go back and look at the revisions from the previous month. So the market reacts really fast to the headline. And then people actually look at the math and they go, oh, wait a minute, the revisions brought everything in line with expectations. So that's why you saw the market kind of recover and we did okay, because there's no big surprises. The only watch out here, folks, is oil prices. That's the thing we have to be careful about. That's the thing that could change the equation for everybody. But other than that, we're in pretty good shape.
Because oil prices go into everything. And if oil prices are more expensive, it costs more to transport the goods and services. So the goods and services have to go up higher to compensate for the fact it costs more to get them there. So that is, like John says, the gotcha. Well, the thing that the Fed is watching and we're certainly watching. But for now, the market is really adjusting to its new dynamic. It's adjusting to the current interest rates and it's adjusting to the inflation number. And it's basically a company by company, sector by sector, that are going to be profitable or not. The ones that are profitable do well, and the ones that are not and miss do get hurt. So
I think one thing to probably sum it all up is we're seeing stabilization at a higher level. Stabilization at a higher level. So it's kind of all the curves are just shifting up.
Okay. So we'll get back to our outlook of the market a little bit later, but I do want to mention one thing that we've been doing a lot of lately. And, you know, I'll just tell you that, you know, my dad went to the hospital, and we needed to have some care for him at home when he got out. And I checked with home health care services, and they told me it cost $37 an hour for someone to come and help him in home health. When my mother needed that 4 years ago, it was only $25 an hour. So there's certainly lots of inflation there, but that cost is astronomical. And so in addition to that, there is still a possibility of the state of California imposing a tax on income for those who don't have long-term care. We don't think it's going to happen this year or early next year, but the word on the street is that is if someone already has long-term care, they could possibly skip having pay that tax. Either whether this tax passes or not, the most important thing is what we've been finding is that when I talk to my younger clients or when I talk to older clients, it's very expensive for older clients to get long-term care. But they look around and they go, you know, my children need this. And of course, the children, if they're 30, 40, or 50, they're not thinking about long-term care because that's a long time from now. But we've had tremendous amount of success the last couple of months with the parents or the grandparents buying a policy, what we call a hybrid policy, where, for example, they can do an ongoing premium or they can do a lump sum, especially if they have a larger estate. But you can do you can buy a policy for your kids or your grandkids while they're young, and it's very inexpensive, and provide life insurance and long-term care at the same time, because we are big believers in, we don't like the policies where you use it or lose it. Okay, the traditional long-term care policy, you pay for it on a monthly basis, they keep increasing the premiums, and if you never need long-term care, everything you've paid is gone. We don't like those policies. We like a policy that either that has life insurance and long-term care. Either one you do a lump sum or one that you can make premiums on. And let's say if you buy $500,000 worth of life insurance, you can have it give you as much as $10,000 a month in long-term care or $20,000 a month in long-term care if you need it, depending on what plan. But it's very inexpensive, plus insurable. One of the hardest things that we find when people are older, insurance companies don't want to insure you. You have any issues, forget it. They do not. We only want to insure someone who's absolutely healthy.
So let's dig into this just a little bit more, Layla. We've said many times, if any of you have come to any of our presentations, it's the greatest risk to your wealth is your health. And, you know, it can really deplete an estate if you require long-term care and you don't have long-term care insurance coverage. So now parents are buying long-term care insurance policies for their younger children at a time when it's relatively inexpensive and guarantees insurability. And this is really a way for a parent to take care of a child probably long after the parent's gone.
Exactly. It's one of the best gifts they can give to their children and grandchildren. The benefits are tax-free. The life insurance benefits are tax-free. The long-term care benefits. I'll tell you, any person that I talk to that had to pay for a person to provide long-term care or be a caregiver, I don't have to ask them twice about whether they want it or not. They are asking me, I want to get this because, you know, I just had my parents here or my grandparents here and I saw what it costs. And with the cost of inflation, which is the thing that we've been talking about here with the stock market, inflation has really affected the labor market. And since long-term care, you're talking about labor. You know, like I was just saying, 4 years ago, it was $25 an hour. Now it's $37 an hour. It's a huge increase in 4 years for the same hourly benefits. And so the cost for long-term care has gone up so much, and it could really eat up your estate and someone's estate. And if you combine it with life insurance, it's one of the best things you can do for yourself if you're still insurable, or you can do for your children. If you want to know more about that, if you have an interest or you want to get a proposal, just contact us. We do have an insurance specialist in our office, and we can run proposals and let you know. I will leave it at that. It's just because it's it's so much on my brain because I've had to deal with it lately. And especially with this potential tax coming, it is an ideal time between now and the end of the year for those of you who are interested to consider and contact us.
And speaking of innovations that we're having in the firm with regard to long-term care, there's another big innovation, Layla, that we have that's important to people about how we can help them in the future, with it, particularly if they have like a Schwab account, a 401k at their own employer. Why don't you share the details of that?
So, as you know, we clear all our business through LPL, but we have a lot of clients that have 401ks, and they have what we call a directed 401k account, where they have it through Schwab or some other institution, and they would come to me and say, well, can't you just manage that for us as well? And in the past, we didn't have the ability to do that. Well, we're very excited and we're very happy to announce that we can actually do that. We are able to manage a Schwab account in a 401k on behalf of our clients and give them and make sure that they're consistent with the risk tolerance and are able to do more than just mutual funds and so forth, where they can actually really diversify their portfolio to meet their objectives. So if you are in that position or have an account like that, certainly contact us and we'll be able to help you.
Yeah, this innovation allows the PWM investment team to really, you know, help make that account work in harmony with all the other things that we're doing for you. And I think that will help long-term make the investment profile should be better overall and more convenient.
Right. So I want to go back to, you know, we've talked about what the Fed is going to do next week. We also think they'll probably pause in November, but there's a likelihood they will raise in December, just maybe another insurance. They're going to be data dependent. But what do you think, Dryden, based on all that, what areas of the market do we really like right now?
Well, there's really only a few areas of the market we don't like. We're not really excited about banks. We're not really excited about some other things, but we like technology. We think AI continues to be something that drives, but we like technology. That's where great productivity comes. So we're favorable towards that. We like energy. I don't think you're going to see a big change in this. Energy is going to, you know, prices are going to, I mean, the bottom line is we have a growing economy in the United States. We have a growing economy globally. We have greater demand for oil and you have less supply. That's going to put prices up. And when you think of companies like Exxon produces over 4.7 million barrels a day. Well, that one company that is probably in many of your portfolios, that one company produces more oil than the country of Iran, which is the, you know, fourth or fifth largest producer. So when you think of some of these energy companies that are U.S. companies that are large producers, we like them. We like things in the energy because, you know, prices are higher. I talked about it on inflation. We've gone from 70, instead of going at a range of 70 to 80, now we're going 80 to 90, and we think that that's going to be the new equilibrium range until we have some regulatory relief or we do something. You know, but basically, they were pulling oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve all last year when they really shouldn't have been. And so they depressed prices for whatever reason they were doing that. And now you're getting a more normalized price and it's much more expensive. I think as long as oil prices stay below $100 a barrel, it affects the economy, it affects people, but it's not recessionary. And so we don't see a recession, but we do want to watch this oil thing. But in general, we like energy. Those companies are going to print money, and that's a good thing. We like industrials. The reason why we like industrials is they make things. You know, they make things. Consumer demand is good. Aggregate demand is good. Companies in the United States that make things are doing pretty decent. So we like industrials. We like infrastructure. Now, I've talked about this many times. We had a very large highway bill, $500 billion passed. And so companies that are aligned to infrastructure and construction inside the United States have the wind at their back for a while because we've got a lot of government spending. We have to rebuild our roads and bridges, and now there's been money allocated to that. And I think that we like those companies. We also like consumer discretionary. I mean, it's not as hot as it was several months ago when everybody was still having all this extra money left over from the COVID stimulus. But consumers consume, and they're making money. And inflation, the rate of inflation is stabilized. Interest rates have begun to stabilize. Households have begun to understand their budgets, right? The only wild card that's out there right now is energy prices. And so I think people are beginning to figure out kind of what my monthly budget is, and that consumer discretionary spending is going to be stabilized. And I think you're going to probably continue to see some margin expansion. I mean, the vast majority of the companies in the S&P 500 have beat earnings and have beat sales. Let me talk about the market, though, a little bit. We think the market is going to continue to be positive for the year. We'll probably be in the low double digits. We think that there's going to continue to be some volatility. Remember, the seven companies accounted for the vast majority of the outperformance of the S&P and the NASDAQ. Those Magnificent Seven now have a PE ratio of close to 32. That means they're pricey, but the earnings of those companies are going up. So we don't see them going down dramatically, but we see their rate of increase slowing. What we really see is the market for the rest of the year, where the market the first part of the year was about the Magnificent Seven. The market for the rest of the year is going to be about the 493 other companies in the S&P that are beginning to see a bid, and they're beginning to see increased earnings. The recession that everybody was terrified of has not happened. And therefore, when you think about what's going on, we've moved from worrying about a hard landing recession or a soft landing recession. We kind of have a no landing moment. And so that we don't really see a recession, and those 493 companies are going to probably beat earnings expectations as we get into the back of the year. That's going to drive that part of the market, giving us some stability. So not a lot to be afraid of right now.
The fact that, the Fed could raise interest rate another 0.25%, it's really not an issue for the market anymore, because it's not enough to have an effect. We still have an inverted yield curve, and that's going to continue until the Fed decides to reduce rates, and that's not going to happen for a while. We think, like Dryden said, that we're going to have interest rates higher for longer, and people are adjusting to that, because on the other hand, they are paying a bit more for things, but they're also earning more on their monies, because we do have an interest rate which we have not had in 15 years. So people have more money to spend. I want to go back to one of the client's questions, which I think we've already pretty much answered, about AI.
Sure.
We have quite a bit of AI investments, because we really do think that that's a huge market mover.
Right. And there's a number of positions in the portfolio that are affiliated with individual companies, and then you have the Transformers UIT, the Transformers Index, and these are transformational technology companies that are ones that we have exposure to, and they are the ones that have spend a tremendous amount of money on research and development. Artificial intelligence didn't occur overnight. This is the same thing that was the Internet of Things. This is the same thing. Other buzzwords around it have gone on. So transformational technology and its application really everywhere is one of the things that we always have in our portfolio. So you certainly have exposure to those. And the important thing is the utilization of it. And I want to, people get a little worried, scary about AI, but what I really want to share with you is technology is the thing that increases labor productivity. And labor productivity is the thing that defeats inflation. And it's the thing that makes wage and price stability occur. So if you think of productivity of the American populace, the American worker, it's near an all-time high. And the more we bring technology into that world, the more productive our workers become, which in the end lowers prices or encourages this disinflation, if you will. So I think that that's important for us to recognize. There's always going to be a demand for how can we use technology to make things faster, cheaper, better. And that's where we like companies that are innovative in that space.
Yeah, very, very good. So basically, no fear of recession right now. Soft landing is what's predicted. And we're very excited about that. One thing I do want to let you know that if you want to hear more about what about us and so forth, I am going to be on Bloomberg on Monday at 3 o'clock. And then I'll be also on Bloomberg Radio. I'll be in Bloomberg TV at 3, Bloomberg Radio at 4. So tune in and listen to me some more if you want to. The next podcast, like I said, will be Thursday, November 2nd. So please mark your calendar from now. And then we will have one more before the end of the year.
Exactly.
So thank you for joining us this afternoon. And I hope you had a great summer. And we will speak to you again soon. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. Opinions voiced in this material are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Historical performance is no guarantee of future results. All indices are unmanaged and may not be invested into directly. This information is not intended to be substitute for specific individualized tax advice. We suggest that you discuss your specific tax issues with a qualified tax advisor. The economic forecasts set forth may not develop as predicted, and there can be no guarantee that strategies promoted will be successful. All investing involves risk, including loss of principal. No strategy assures success or protects against loss. All company names noted herein are for educational purposes only and not an indication of trading intent or a solicitation of their products or services. Layla Pence is a registered representative with and securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA/SIPC. Financial planning offered through Pence Wealth Management, a registered investment advisor. Dryden Pence is a registered representative with and offers securities and advisory services through LPL Financial, LLC, LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC and a registered investment advisor. Mr. Pence may offer financial planning services through Pence Wealth Management, PWM, a registered investment advisor. Pence Wealth Management, PWM, is a financial services practice within LPL Financial LLC, LPL Financial, comprised of multiple financial professionals that provide a series of services including personal investment advisory, third-party managed advisory and brokerage services. Pence Wealth Management Incorporated is an investment advisor registered with the state of California to provide financial planning services. The financial professionals affiliated with PWM are registered with and offer securities and investment advisory services through LPL Financial, member FINRA/SIPC and a registered investment advisor. As of December 31, 2021, the total assets serviced by PWM through LPL Financial consist of over $1.95 billion in advisory and $383 million in brokerage assets.